A lot of times, firms have created the round hole, and they're trying to fit every square peg that they can into it. You sort of take the shape of the advisor and their firm and their practice, and you sort of build the solution around that.
What is the goal in 5 years, right? What does that look like? Can we help build that? Most of the advisors that we work with are way better than I ever would have been as a financial advisor. So are there resources we can provide to help them? Yes. And can we help them from the business management perspective? Absolutely. I don't like the grid. Why do we have a grid? I know as a solo practitioner coming on board with us and leveraging our firm, it's $32,000, 100% payout. You know, you're at 85% payout and you use four of the 20 things and two of them are terrible. Any program that any partner firm or advisor is going to leverage of ours has to be self-sustainable. Unfortunately, everybody tries to change things in the margins. Like, oh, if we can get 1% better. Why do we just want to focus on getting 1% better? We have more room than 1%.
It is my absolute privilege to welcome Robert Russo to the Advisor Advocates podcast today. This is one I've been really looking forward to. Robert, I think including the 45 seconds or so that we had before I hit record, I think we have about 45 seconds of total pre-production prep for this, and that's exactly the way I like it.
Yeah,
I've had enough cool conversations with you to know that we can kind of shoot from the hip and just kind of roll with it. So for listeners or viewers, if you're on YouTube, Robert is the founder and CEO and head man in charge of Independent Advisor Alliance out of Charlotte. You founded that in 2014. Start off, just kind of tell me the backstory a little bit again. I know I've heard it a few times, but yeah. Tell the listeners out there kind of why did you start IAA and what's kind of the story behind it?
Yeah, I like to say that I'm an accidental business owner, like many advisors that make the leap and go independent. Started off as an advisor, was in training during September 11th, 2001, out in California, and worked for a great company. I was an advisor with AG Edwards in the kind of Newport Beach, Irvine area of Southern California. And, you know, everything was going really well out there. And I had moved to California to find myself, and I found my wife. And she was a student at UCLA. I'm about 5 years old, 6 years older than she is. And so we really could have gone anywhere. She's from San Francisco. I'm from Philadelphia. We got engaged. We randomly picked Charlotte. You know, I had some friends that lived here. And so when we moved here, I went from the AG Edwards there to the AG Edwards here. And I always kind of acknowledged that the name on the outside of the door might be the same, but the culture inside the office is always going to be very different from location to location. So shortly after the move to Charlotte, I decided that I was no longer going to remain at AG Edwards, and I left to go independent and went to LPL Financial. That would have been in May of 07. And so from May of 07 until 2014, I was a financial advisor. I was mostly on the institutional space, did some retail, and was really trying to ultimately be known as the 401k guy. I think I still have an old Twitter account out there when it was called Twitter back in the day, and it literally says the 401k guy. So look it up. There won't be a post in 10 years. But, you know, my idea at the time was, can I work with all of these independent business owners and practitioners that are really good in the retail space, high net worth, mom and pop, you know, financial planning space, and can I be their retirement plan arm? And so when I came to LPL in May of 07, that was my plan. And what ended up happening was, you know, I was struggling to build some trust with some of the advisors, right? They have a business owner that has maybe their largest account. And did they really want to refer me the 401k business that could potentially derail that larger account? And so it was really difficult. And so I had talked to some folks, and I still to a good friend to this day. And you know, he had told me if I ever thought about being an OSJ. So I hadn't. I learned about it, and very shortly after, in 2009, became an OSJ and started kind of doing a little recruiting, and I was becoming kind of, you know, all things to all people, which is never great. But what it did was it allowed me to kind of pursue something that ultimately became my passion. So when you're doing the 401k business and you're in a large conference room and you have, you know, whether it's the owner, CEO, you know, their investment committee, their HR, whomever, and you're really kind of checking some boxes. And I really just learned that, you know, maybe that's not the path for me. And I really enjoy talking to the advisors. I've been an advisor. I felt like I could help solve a problem, you know, that they're about to face before they had to face it. And so it was kind of a slow process. And then in 2014, I decided I'm all in. I can build a business based upon the advisor and making sure that they don't just go independent, but they learn how to run a good business. And then how do they leverage all of the things that our firm would do? And how do we fill in all the gaps of things that advisors either don't want to do, you know, maybe they're not very good at it, or they couldn't recreate it at the same economic level as we could as an outsourced firm. So really, Independent Advisor Alliance ultimately came out as an accident, but also I think the experience of being independent, having to make a transition, having to repaper, really needing kind of more of a community of folks to really help, because being independent shouldn't mean being alone. And I think that's unfortunately how a lot of people feel. So it was a culmination of things, but it got me to the place where my passion lies, and it just was a little unexpected. But I'm super excited to be here now. And, you know, since 2014, we've had a lot of success, and I've had a lot of enjoyment along the way.
Yeah, it's a really cool story. And I think that branding and how you get yourself out there is really important. And I have to say, like, you can't describe what Independent Advisor Alliance is any better than what your firm name does. You are an alliance of independent advisors, right? I mean, it's a perfect name. It may be a really simple, obvious thing to say that, but a lot of times advisors and firms and business owners struggle to get their branding right. But that is exactly what you do. And as I have gotten to know your story, you know, more over the last couple of years, it's really cool that, and I've heard you say this a lot, your number one goal or objective is to help advisors execute their visions. And when you were just talking about checking boxes, I mean, this is something I notice a lot from working with different firms. A lot of times firms have created the round hole, and they're trying to fit every square peg that they can into it. And you seem to take a very different approach to that, where you sort of take the shape of the advisor and their firm and their practice and what they're trying to do. And you sort of build the solution around that. You sort of build the slot to put it into as well as you can. And there are going to be some that are not going to be, you can't accommodate everything for everyone, but you seem to have a much more advisor centric, how can we take what they're doing and then build around it to help them get where they need to be?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately if our mission is to help business owners execute their vision, we have to recognize that they might need some resources to accomplish that, an accountability partner. The similarities of the partner firms, and we have 140 of them. Of the 140, the similarity is they're very entrepreneurial. They have a passion to run their business at the localized level, and they just appreciate some support, whether it's from a service side and making them feel tight-knit and not having to call a call center, whether it's being an accountability partner. We do a lot of vision boarding where, you know, we really want to understand what is the goal in 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, right? What does that look like? And then can we help build that? And actually, there was a stat I heard. It was only a couple of months ago. I was up in New York at a conference, and I kind of reiterated the stat about, you know, if you ask financial planners or advisors how many of them work in the financial planning space, just about all of them raise their hand. But the FPA, the Financial Planning Association, did a study that only 29% of advisors actually have a business plan. And there's a really big disconnect there. Some of it is just the reality that when we go to school, most of us went to college or you get your MBA, you don't really talk about creating a business plan, right? And it's more academic than it is practical. So really what we want to do is bring that down to a practical level, make the complex extremely simple. So you've been on many calls with me. You know, I joke, I'm a 6-year undergrad at University of Tennessee. I am not going to come up with some crazy formula. I think it just comes to, hey, let's just sit down and let's whiteboard out what you really are dreaming about. And then you start to get it pretty close. And when you get within that year, you realize if you did this, that you're on track for that, right? And so I think just leveraging, I wouldn't call it coaching, but more of an accountability partner. We have coaching, but at the firm level, it's just making sure that we're always questioning the advisor and pushing them to say, okay, this is what you're doing now. Is this ultimately going to help you execute your vision? And if not, what are things that we can do to help you do that?
When I was an advisor, so I sort of gradually worked my way up from being inside the W-2 channel to independent and then eventually having my own RIA. And as I made that progression, I felt more and more isolated and got to a point where by the end of that run where I started to look at the idea of selling my business and doing something different, a big driver behind that was you're on what I call advisor island and you don't really know, you're sort of confined from an information standpoint to you see the world just from, you know, inside the walls of your firm, whatever that is. And for me, it was just a one man show.
Right.
So I didn't know if I was doing the right things. I didn't know if this strategy would work. I didn't know what pitfalls were out there with this idea or that idea. And as I started to get into recruiting and working with other advisors and other firms, I heard that as a common denominator a lot of times, especially independent advisors. It's every man for themselves, and they don't know who they can trust, for one. They don't know, first of all, who you can trust just because of the industry we're in. But then also, even those who may have, who you might be able to trust from an integrity standpoint, can you really trust that they know what they're talking about, or that they're right, or that their ideas are any good? So a lot of times, just having somebody as a sounding board, it's not so much as a, you're not their boss, you're not their coach. It may be hard to pin down what the word is for that, other than, you know, accountability partners one, but just someone to bounce ideas, just a sounding board as much as anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, we might have some good ideas in certain scenarios, but most of our ideas are coming from something that somebody's already done.
Yeah.
You know, I think, what do they say? If plagiarism is copying something, but if you do it, if you look at least two or three, it's considered research or something like that. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, and wholesalers do this too, and some are better than others, but you know, they're out there and they're seeing all of these successful advisors. Where I think our unique spin is, we're seeing it at the business owner level. You know, our industry is very commoditized in terms of, okay, yes, you do financial planning. Yes, you do, you know, investment management. Yes, you do insurance. Most advisors will all fit in those boxes. They might have a different philosophical, you know, approach to it, but ultimately they're solving the same thing. But we never really talk about, why did you go independent? And it was really to break free of conflict and to do things on your own. But no one ever talks about, well, now you're a business owner. Now you're bringing in a whole new host of issues, a whole new host of opportunities. And so how do we take those issues and overcome them? How do we take those opportunities and lay into them? That's the fun part. Nobody talks about, when you hear independence, it means different things to different people. Nobody says, oh, I'm going to be a business owner. They say, I'm going independent. And so I think that is a really big gap that advisors are facing, is they don't know how to, should you have healthcare benefits? Do you want to do your own payroll? Do you have a handbook? Are you up on all the HR, the Department of Labor? What about your marketing strategy? Yeah, you know, all those things that you could be selling furniture, you could be selling financial advice. All of these folks need to be able to do those business owner things. And that's really our strong suit, because, you know, I don't want to say I'm a failed advisor because I left willingly and I saw an opportunity. But the reality is, most of the advisors that we work with are way better than I ever would have been as a financial advisor. So how am I going to help them be a financial advisor, right? How am I going to help? I don't know. You know, I struggle with that. But are there resources we can provide to help them? Yes. And can we help them from the business management perspective? Absolutely.
I've really enjoyed getting to know you and your entire team. And I think a big part of the reason there's a lot of synergy there is I could echo a lot of that for myself. I mean, I think I enjoy helping advisors way more than I enjoy being an advisor. I don't know. You're right. It's a very commoditized industry at this point, but there are a lot of really, really good advisors out there and a lot of really brilliant advisors with really brilliant ideas. And there's a lot to be taken from being able to ethically benefit from the collection of these ideas and sharing these ideas and taking what you're learning and sharing it with other advisors without it being stealing somebody's ideas or anything like that. And that's kind of what you're doing there. You're able to draw from 140 different teams, and there are things that each is going to do extremely well that you're able to then share with the others. And that's where that alliance really kind of comes in, and that you're not stealing something from your team in San Diego when you give it to your team in Charleston or wherever the hypothetical may be there. It's a rising tide that's lifting all boats and allowing for sort of a free flow of ideas between like-minded advisors with different approaches for how they execute.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we do a lot of in-person meetings, in-person conferences. We just did a growth retreat and that was in Greenville, South Carolina. And, when you have business owners, they're advisors, and I understand that. Advisors in like more of a wirehouse setting are generally less likely to share how they're doing what they're doing because they only have this one unique thing. But when you're a business owner and you can shape it in so many unique ways, they get really excited to share their story. They want to. We've seen a lot of mentorship, not just even just, okay, well, there's an older advisor and a younger advisor, but just, hey, you're doing it this way. That's really cool. Can you share with me? And they do. It's a safe space, right? I mean, the business owner space, we're all in it to make the business a better place to be. We want this to be a place where younger folks want to come into business, to be an advisor. And so we really see a lot of sharing. We see a lot of effort and helping each other get better. There's no competition, which is odd. I think you would assume it, but there's really not. I think the business owner has their own drive and they don't really need outside forces to make them want to be better. But the outside forces are helping them get better in the alliance and in any kind of a networking scenario. So it's really neat to see. I really enjoy those get-togethers. And there are so many ways that advisors can be better business owners. And the easiest example, and it's probably been said 1,000 times. So if you're listening to this, I say this quite a bit. But just the simplest approach, just take – there's 2,080 hours of work hours in a work year. What is your take-home pay? Divide it by that, and what do you make per hour? And then start to think about, again, I know this is extremely basic, but then think about if you make $250 an hour, think about every job you do in your day that you would offer somebody $200 an hour to do it. Then you have a great opportunity because my guess is you can find somebody for $30 an hour or $50 an hour. And so while you can't get a lot of things back, you can get more time. And that is a unique thing, right? So get more time back. And that's how I think businesses, when you talk about scale, you talk about all these cool buzzwords. At the end of the day, it's all about time and using your time in the space where you love it, you're great at it, and it's profitable.
Yeah, I think making the complex simple seems to be a theme of my week right now, or last week or two. I feel like I keep hearing that a lot from different places, and there's a lot to be said for that because you can take anything and make it as complicated as you want to, but at the same time, a lot of times what we don't think about is how do we take that thing that seems complicated and boil it down to the simplest common denominator. And IA does a good job with that, and you do a really good job with that. I'm not trying to fluff you up or anything like that, but I've really enjoyed listening to those conversations and how you boil that down. Because I've brought some conversations to you that I thought were going to be pretty complicated, and it's kind of cool to listen to that by about the 45th minute or so of the hour when it really starts to get down to the simplest next steps. It's like, okay, you have a knack for that. It's cool to watch.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit. I think this is the coolest part of IAA is your culture. You have a really, really cool group of people that you work with there. I mean, no joke. I came in there for the first time, I think about a year and a half ago. And you've got the sign hanging on your wall, the Mamba mentality. I took a picture of that. That is literally the backdrop of my phone. Not my kids, not my dog. A picture from your office is my phone's background. And then when I was there a few months ago, just your core values, there's one that I stole and started, at least, maybe not necessarily using it so much as trying to remember it, humbly confident.
Yeah.
And that's a great way of expressing what I think what we need to strive to be. But to me, there are a million different key differentiators, and the whole industry is very commoditized. But to me, one of the biggest key differentiators, the more commoditized the rest of the industry gets, the human element becomes a more and more important key differentiator. And because anybody can copy your business plan on us. I mean, you have a really cool business, but it's not something that's impossible to copy in terms of how exactly you execute, what you charge, what you offer advisors. You can rip that stuff off. You can't rip off culture and IAA has, you guys just have a, you seem to have a lot of fun. And in a, you know, I texted you this morning, or you texted me and said, what do I wear for this podcast? I said, well, just be yourself, because I knew you'd show up in a hooded sweatshirt or a baseball cap. And that this is what Robert, this is how Robert shows up to the office, I think, most days. I don't think I've ever seen you with a tie on.
Yeah, no, culture is a big deal. We do have, you know, we have our core values. We talk about them. We hire people based upon the core values. We do all of our reviews based upon the core values. And quite frankly, we fire based upon the core values. You know, a lot of things change over time. But again, when you get back to the foundational stuff, that's going to have longevity. So you mentioned one of them, Humbly Confident, my favorite. The other one that I really like is Positive Energy. You know, I think what we're doing is not brain surgery. It's very important, and it's very, you know, it's a very professional industry, but we also have to take a step back and we have to enjoy the ride a little bit. And that goes for myself, our leadership team, all members of our staff. When you go into an office and the employees aren't happy, that's a problem. And, you know, when we have home office visits or we have people come in, we want them to feel that we actually appreciate them that are there, and that we all as an employee family love one another, because that then when you call as a client and we pick up the phone, they're smiling, that changes everything. So I was given a podcast. We do EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System, and we have a coach who helps us with that. His name is Matthew. He's phenomenal. But he sent me a podcast, and it was called Unrealistic Hospitality, I think is the name of it. But it goes to the difference between service and hospitality. Service is kind of when you go to a restaurant and, you know, you order your food and it comes out on time and, you know, it's hot. You know, that's service. In our industry, in my eye, that should be table stakes. You're just doing what you said you'd do, and you're doing it well. That's great. But hospitality is when that waiter comes over, the waitress comes over, you know, how do they make you feel, right? You think back of your experiences in food and you're at restaurants. Yeah, there are places that have good meals and not so good meals. But if you've ever been to a place where you just felt like that place was there specifically for you that day, and they were, you know, the hospitality just, I mean, you're going to remember that feel and you want to experience that again. And so every day we work here to strive to make sure that we might not be in the restaurant business, but we are in hospitality. And, yeah, you know, they're our clients. And we want them to feel us smiling on the other end of the phone.
Yeah. Give some examples, if you don't mind, of, I want to talk a little bit about the X's and O's of your business, because it really is a cool approach that you take to really just the way you design programs for your advisors and the cost structure and the economics and everything is very unique. So I just want to give some examples of that. Talk a little bit about, for an advisor who wants to be, for your member firms and your teams, what do the economic structures look like? And then some examples of the program, because you have kind of like an a la carte approach to the economics with the advisors. It's not a payout grid where you get all these things that you may or may not necessarily need for X percent of your revenue. You let the advisor kind of customize that. So wanted to give some time to at least talking about that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's where we're probably going to be obviously unique at the surface level. And it does go to the core, because I believe, like, we had a hashtag burn the grid. And I don't like the grid. Why do we have a grid? I think we had a grid. And so it's just everybody, unfortunately, everybody tries to change things in the margins. Like, oh, if we can get 1% better, why do we just want to focus on getting 1% better? We have more room than 1%. So I look at it as, okay, how much time is it going to take for my team to surveil and service you, the advisor, or the partner firm? But that's not a percentage. It's time. I know how much they make. I know how much a senior analyst in compliance makes. I know how much the technology costs to surveil. So let's focus on time and money, and then we can turn around and come up with cost. And so connecting value and cost, again, I don't have an MBA. I was a 6-year. I went to school as much as an MBA student. But the reality is, if you were to walk through and figure that out, I mean, we're just going to charge per brand $20,000. And then for every advisor, not admin, but every advisor, somebody that would be covered under E&O, if you're hybrid, it's $12,000. So I know as a solo practitioner coming on board with us and leveraging our firm, it's $32,000, 100% payout on advisory. And if you have a BD, it's at 90%. And that's because the BD takes the 10.
Yeah.
So to start off, you know, that's a framework that we believe that business owners appreciate. You're going to pay, and we've never raised our pricing, you're going to pay the same thing. So when you're building out a forecast, it's not going to be based upon market. It's like, okay, no, they cost, this gentleman and this firm cost $32,000. So that's the first thing, is aligning ourselves, recognizing they're a business, recognizing that they're their own business. And that's our service. And then the other thing that started to come out of that was, you know, we were, like everybody else in the beginning, we were a compliance shop. And I can tell you, I didn't wake up one day super excited to recognize that I was selling compliance. It might not be the sexiest thing, but there are some really cool things about compliance, but I just didn't think that's what I was doing.
Right.
So then you build out.
We have a way of doing that sometimes, waking up and realizing we started a business that what we're now doing is never what we would have actually set out to do, but it's kind of cool. So,
yeah, I mean, it's so, you know, we talked about earlier about, okay, well, there are certain things that are commoditized, whether it's investment management, certain financial planning, whatever it is. But I don't believe, if I have a grid and let's say we compete against firms all the time, they say they'll give you an 85% payout and look at all these things they give you. And that's a long list. And look, if those things were good, you know, I might have to change my story, but they're not, right? And so, you know, you're at 85% payout and you use 4 of the 20 things and 2 of them are terrible, right? So you go back and you say, hey, instead of 85, maybe bump me up to 90 because I'm not using these things. And let's be honest, these things aren't very good. Well, they're not going to do it. And so that's how the firm has started. And then what the firm realizes is, wow, we can just give them an 85% and not invest any money in those little things that they solve, because that's a recruiting thing. But day in, day out, they're not going to select them anyway because they're not very good. Mm-hmm. We'll still get that 15%. And so what we decided to do is say, any program that any partner firm or advisor is going to leverage of ours has to be self-sustainable, not related to any other part of the business that they're leveraging us for. Small example, Creative Capital. That's our division that has a PR person, multiple marketing people, our chief marketing officer, digital marketing, all that stuff. Like, we would build out and then we would say, okay, this is how much it costs. And again, that's a dollar amount. You know, maybe people say, hey, I don't want to deal with payroll. I want to be a sole practitioner where I can sock away as much money as a business owner. And I have, let's say, 5 employees that are in that $60,000 to $80,000 range. Well, let us hire them and then we'll lease them back to you. That way you can be a business owner with all those benefits. The employees can jump on our group health plan. They can have a 401k plan. We can run all their technology. And you don't have to be the person that knows how to open up a PDF when there's something wrong. You don't need to do all those things. And so, again, that's an optional thing. And so, all of the outside of compliance, whether it's, you know, marketing, whether it's business development and recruiting, whether it's investment management, all of those things are going to be, hey, here's our plan. Here's what I make an hour. Who in the entire landscape is best at these things? I want to hire them. We want to have enough trust with them along the way for them to give us an opportunity to earn another sliver of the business. And those will be self-sufficient items rather than just, we'll throw it in there, because then it's never going to be any good. So very different. I love to have that argument with folks on the debate stage about our model. And it's fun. And it's who we are as a core. And you mentioned somebody can copy the business plan. We compete against firms that are a grid, and all of a sudden there's a big advisor and they say, well, Independent Advisor Alliance is 32. I'll do it at like 28. I'm telling you, from the core, that doesn't work. Eventually there's going to be a reason that there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
We're all in and we're passionate about why we're doing it. Not just the fact that it's being well received. It's a passion.
Well, and from my experience with the advisors in that scenario where, you know, they've got the offer on the table from IAA for 32 and somebody else comes in and offers 28, I am 99% sure that they're not going to make the decision of what to do with their business based on $4,000.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing that I kind of, that's really what makes me go back to what I said earlier about it. Now the people and the culture becomes really the key differentiator, because if they were going to take the $4,000, then cost would be the key differentiator, right? That's not what they're doing. Most advisors nowadays it's more about the, you know, finding the right cultural fit. And a point that you made there is that for each of these programs, I mean, your advisors are independent, right? So if they don't want to use your program, you have to compete with whoever else out there in the industry is offering those, because your advisors are independent. They do not have to use your service. They can hire their own marketing team, do their own investment management, hire their own recruiters, hire their own HR people, whatever it is that you're offering. You have to be the best, or at the very least, be very good at it in order to just for your advisors to justify using you versus whoever the best is out there. And, you know, there are going to be times that the advisor does feel that you are the best for it, and they'll hire you. And for the ones that they feel like someone else may be a better fit for their needs, they have the freedom to do that because they're independent. At least in, you know, I'm sure there might be some here and there that due to compliance reasons or whatever, maybe they do have to, they can't farm out their compliance if they don't like the way you do compliance, because that is kind of a key. But for the most part, yeah, they have control over that. I do want to, I want you to tell the story from college though, before we wrap this thing up. So you've got the Tennessee sign hanging in the background there. I want you to tell the story of your senior year in college and playing football at the University of Tennessee. Oh, I think that is the, I know it's not, it's cool for me to hear it. I know it's not cool for you to tell it, but it's a great story.
I always have to preface. So I was like a fifth string kicker at Tennessee for a very small period of time. While I was there, Peyton Manning was the quarterback. Jeff Hall, right, was the he was the kicker. He was drafted. I mean, I was literally on the sideline. I never dressed in a game. But I, at the time, I wanted to be a sports agent. And so I was really learning, I think, you know, how the programs worked and, you know, just that whole world. It was very unique because I grew up in Philadelphia. And when I walked on to the campus, University of Tennessee, I was just shocked about the way that they run their program and just the sports in general. So, you know, for me, I think it's been a really good talking point because somebody will be like, oh, that's kind of cool. And maybe it opens up a door or two. And I always acknowledge, like, look, I wasn't anybody, like, you know, put it this way. There's no NIL deal that they owe me for that they use my name on the back of a jersey or something. But you know, it's fun. And the one story I will tell you that's somewhat related is there's my head coach at the time. His name was Philip Fulmer. He's a great man. And never recruited me. Like, I wasn't recruited, right? I just walked on. And again, it was a very, very small period of time. But, you know, I met, you know, I knew the coach or whatnot and never would come to visit me, like recruit me kind of thing. Well, fast forward to about, you know, probably about 7 or 8 years ago, Philip Fulmer came to my office because he's in the industry to some degree. He's an investor in a mutual fund company. And he was recruiting me. I looked at him, I said, are you recruiting me? Like, are you trying to earn my business right now? So I thought that was pretty cool.
Finally, 25 years later, Philip Fulmer's finally recruiting you.
Yeah. So it was a good experience. I love the University of Tennessee. I could promote them all day long. And so I will tell you that T in the back there, it's hard for you to see it. It's got the IA logo in the center.
Okay.
And it's got the Charlotte skyline, and we had our 10-year anniversary in February of this year, and we did a big party at my house. We invited advisors in. We had a bunch of people come from, you know, California, Michigan, Wisconsin, like all over, right?
Yeah.
Florida, whatever. Brian Weifrich, he got that handmade for me, which is really cool. So shout out to Brian if he's listening. And then I found out, if you're a baseball fan, they had the Mets had that OMG signs. Mm-hmm. The same person did that as does those OMG. So
oh, sweet.
I'm a big sports guy. It's everywhere. And so I like to tell anything to do with sports or IAA. So
now, didn't you tell me that you decided not to be a part of football your senior year because Peyton was leaving and you were tired of the practices? And it was like, you know, I think I'm just going to sit this one out and then have that end up for you.
Yeah. So I probably should have known that's where you were going. So the reality was I wasn't any good. I wasn't going to get to play. Do I really want to do this another year? Peyton Manning's graduating. And they're just like, what's the upside? So, you know, I was in a fraternity. I spent more time doing that. I had a job. I was actually a bartender and I ran like was in the intramural sports programs where I was a referee and did some stuff. So I was doing all kinds of stuff. Right. That's why it took 6 years is what I like to say. But, you know, and then, of course, you know, Peyton graduates and why am I sticking around? You know, and then we win the national championship the next year with T. Martin, who's also a very stand-up guy. So sometimes you hold on. I, sometimes I think if I would have stayed around, would that have been really cool? Yes. But, you know, at the same time, I wouldn't go back and change the path. I'm very appreciative and blessed to be where I am.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I really enjoyed this. And as I'll always plug myself and my guest at the end of it here. So if you advisors out there who are exploring independence, or even if you are independent, if you are shopping firms or just considering different cultures out there, Robert and his team are a really, really top-notch, first-class group down there. And I would love to introduce you. If I can make an introduction, feel free to shoot me a text or call me on my cell, which is in the description, 919-561-2436. Email me at garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com. Go to the Advisor Advocates and find my calendar link, book a call with me at your convenience. Ever how you want to get in touch with me, I'd love to connect you with Robert and his team if you'd like to learn more. Robert, thank you, man. I really appreciate you taking time to do this. It was
good
fun.
To see you, as always, and I appreciate it. And I'll plug you for those that are looking to make a change. Yes, you can talk to me and a bunch of people individually, but it's a really big world out there. And so if you can just filter from a bunch of nonsense down to maybe, you know, a few folks that somebody like Garrett can help you kind of go through, I think that's a wise decision.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate that. I hope you enjoy some of your, this won't be released on this day, but we are recording this on election day. So you enjoy your, I don't have mine. I voted last week, so I don't have my sticker, but enjoy the show tonight. And if it doesn't rip the universe apart, hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Well, I'll be fine.
All right, man.
Good to see you, Garrett.
You too, dude.
See you, buddy. Bye-bye. Bye.